savings would be in the neighborhood of a half a mil on your property tax. This would be, of course, added to the area-wide mill rate increase of 1.04 mil. That concludes my testimony on this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And we do have a question from Chairman Larson.
Not a question, I guess just a statement. If you look at the state operating budget over the last 11 years now, and you look at the formula programs over the last 11 years, and the only adjustment you make is the adjustment for inflation, that the state agency operating budget has decreased about 11% in the pass-through programs to individuals and to local governments have increased about the same amount. Over the last 11 years, the shift in state spending has been away from the state agencies towards the formula programs. And granted, and I think it's an important point that we have to make, where do we spend $551 million this year? It's on a permanent fund dividend program. Where do we spend $73 million this year? It's on the longevity bonus. Where is the biggest increases in the state budget this year? It's in AFDC and Medicaid. So I'm agreeing with what Mr. Moore had to say, but I think it's important that we also point out that what are the things that are causing the biggest increases in the state government? And maybe it's time that we as a state and as a local government start to look at some of these public policies and see if they're the policies we want to continue, or if we should make major changes so that we can meet some of these basic needs of all the people. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Madam Chairman.
Yes, Representative Martin.
One question specifically for Mat-Su area, but they inherited not only a lot of land, they inherited a lot of trees. Some of them are dead trees, spruce bark beetle trees. Now, the one in what your community is now receiving in federal forestry tax, if you allow tree harvesting at all, some communities are absolutely opposed to that. But are you harvesting trees, at least cutting down the dead trees and selling them for pulp? It's another industry that your community could have that others may not have the opportunity.
We do have timber sales underway in this borough right now and have had some for several years. They're mostly small logging operations. We have made some attempts to get into the pulp industry program, but so far that has been unsuccessful. We have a large program pending up in the northern part of the borough, or central part of the borough, called the Strategic Forest, which involves about 25,000 acres that we're negotiating with a forestry industry company right now to get a program, logging program going there. And we are interested in logging and doing something with our resources, but we've been going slow on that one because, as you pointed out, it requires a lot of discussion and it's controversial.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Moore. And we'll go to the City of Nome now. Paul Day.
Thank you very much. Good morning, and I thank the House Finance Committee for the opportunity to address this issue. My name is Paul Day. I'm the city manager here in Nome. I'd like to reemphasize a couple of things that I've heard briefly. First of all, I do emphasize with the tough job that the legislature does face in Juneau. It's never any fun to try to slice up a pie when there's more plates there than there are pieces. One thing I would like to say, and I'd like to reiterate what Gary Patton said, is that I think a 50% reduction in over a one-year period is drastic, far too drastic. I think that stable adjustment of these programs over a number of years would help local communities, especially smaller communities, deal with these drastic cuts. To give you an example, here in Nome, Nome currently received in FY94 approximately $730,000 of municipal assistance and revenue sharing. That is approximately 10% of the City of Nome's general fund budget, and about $200,000 of that is direct pass-through on the revenue sharing side. coming in and saying, sure, you've got to cut the budget, but don't cut it in my backyard. I know that's a tough decision to make. I would just ask that if reductions are necessary, that they're done in a much more well thought out and longer range approach rather than a 50% reduction over a 1 year period. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Day, for your information. If no more to be cut 50% combined with the revenue sharing municipal assistance, you'd be cut $391,916, and that would be a percentage of 53.2%, just for your information. And for Representative Martin's information.
Well, I think his fish tax will make up for that, Madam Chairman, this year.
Okay, we have, we'll come back here. We have Mr. Smith, City of Kotzebue, to testify. And then we'll have Mr. Palesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Jeff Smith. I'm the city manager for the city of Kotzebue, and I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you today to talk about this. There are no better representatives than those assembled here in this room and throughout the teleconference sites around the state who can appreciate the difficulty you face with the state's current budget crisis. Municipalities are on the front lines dealing with reductions in state programs and unfunded state mandates. As an example, the senior citizens' property tax exemption, underfunding of the contract jails, just to name a few. We live every day battling a financial crisis not entirely of our own making. My city had to deal with substantial budget deficits that had us on the brink of bankruptcy just 3 short years ago. The city council and our community had to make difficult decisions to cope with this crisis. These decisions included drastic budget cuts requiring the layoff of many city workers, reduction of the city work week, and forcing all of our employees to take leave without pay. Several city programs have been eliminated entirely, and our citizens have voted to increase our sales tax by 50%. Despite all these sacrifices, we still have a deficit of over $800,000. After having had our revenue sharing and municipal assistance reduced to $172,000 over the last 3 fiscal years, further reductions in revenue sharing and municipal assistance of the magnitude proposed by Governor Hickel would be devastating for Kotzebue. We would have to freeze hiring and wages, and make further cuts in the city's already reduced payroll, eliminating a further 13% of our police department and 13% of our public works department. Other impacts would be lack of funding for needed capital improvement projects like increased security and safety at the contract jail that we operate for the state. The political rhetoric that we hear from Juneau is that municipalities are not paying their fair share. Nothing could be further from the truth. As an example, over 73% of our city's general fund is raised locally. That's $1,750,000 in an area that by every definition is economically depressed. These local contributions do not include the monies we raise for the operation and debt service of our water, sewer, and garbage system. I appreciate Representative Larson's comments regarding the growth in formula-based programs, but I think if you were to take out municipal assistance and revenue sharing and isolate it from all of the other AFDC and other ones, you would find that we have already received a 50% reduction in revenue sharing and municipal assistance over the years. So take those programs out and you will find that we have been reduced far greater than any state agencies. On behalf of our mayor, city council, and citizens of Kotzebue, I urge you to restore the revenue sharing and municipal assistance cuts proposed by Governor Hickel to their FY94 levels. Your time and attention is appreciated.
We also have Mr. Palesh to testify.
Representative McLean, Representative Larson, members of the House Finance Committee, I appreciate this opportunity to be with you today to discuss this important issue for all municipalities in the state of Alaska. Since FY85, the city and borough of Juneau has absorbed 58.1% cut in state revenue sharing and 54.9% cut in municipal assistance. To make up the difference, the CBJ has had to reduce full-time employees and cut services, not unlike other Alaska municipalities. In FY 1994, state revenue sharing municipal assistance was cut by 7%, and police jurisdiction for that area north of Mendenhall River was also given over to the CBJ. This resulted in a 17% increase in the number of police personnel. That was not anticipated. You can't not provide minimum police service. In a few days, the manager's budget is due before the CBJ assembly, and some assumptions have had to be made, one in particular that only a 15% cut in state aid would ultimately be adopted. This would result in between 6 and 10 employee layoffs, no employee salary increase for the second year in a row, and a property tax increase. Should the proposed 50% cut be adopted, the already anticipated property tax increase would either have to expand threefold or additional service cuts made. As an example, if taxes were relied upon solely, the mill levy would increase by 1.55 mills, or $214 for each average household. Cuts in lieu of a tax increase would be beyond quality of life programs, but start affecting infrastructure maintenance and possibly health and safety issues. I've attached appropriate fiscal notes to my comments as backup material that I'll give you at the end of my comments. It is the intent of the state to eventually abolish the state revenue sharing and municipal assistance programs, as seems to be the trend. We would ask that you consider three things. Establish a multi-year phase-in policy for any aid program cuts to allow municipalities time to plan ahead. Exercise restraint on passing any legislation which would impact municipalities without first addressing their fiscal impact. Three, do not tie the hands of local government in their ability to impose appropriate taxes and fees. We do not oppose belt tightening at all levels of government. It can be very fiscally therapeutic. However, municipalities can be very innovative in coping with their own problems. Please allow us the time to do so and become part of the solution. Before I conclude my comments, I would not like to leave this without making a positive comment. I'm new to Alaska. I've been here about a year. Going through Juneau, there's hardly a place that I can go that I don't see the benefits of state aid and some of the projects that we've all enjoyed. And I would like to take this opportunity to not only thank the governor and the legislature, but the state of Alaska for the many years of plenty that we've all enjoyed.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you. We do have William Hunter from the city of Bethel. Mr. Hunter?
Yes, for the record, I'm William Hunter, city manager, city of Bethel. I'm pleased to have this opportunity to testify before the committee. I wish it was under other different circumstances, but it's imperative that the voice of rural Alaska be heard at this particular time. Let me just say for the record that the municipal assistance cut will have a drastic and disproportionate impact on the city of Bethel. Primarily, as other speakers have indicated, because we lack a sufficient tax base to raise funds to make up the loss. Historically, if you look at the years of in terms of state revenue sharing, in 1994, Bethel had $381,000, and the proposed cut of includes an amount reduced to $190,000. This represents a 50% cut on top of a continued decline in revenue overall. And when you look at the Bethel community, we're further impacted by the drastic cuts because, as other speakers have indicated, much of the monies are simply passive. For example, $48,000 is for the River Ice Road contract, where Bethel is maintaining roads outside the city limits, $127,000 for local health services, and most of the health services that clients, that's for the 56 villages that surround Bethel itself, which is the largest service center in Alaska. The monies here cannot be made up by taxes, as I stated, because the majority of our land is owned by native corporations. Bethel does not have a property tax and is more dependent on sales tax and state funds and other governments in the state and perhaps in the nation. We suffer from what we call rural government overburden and high service needs with decreasing revenues with limited options. We here, in terms of the city, the impact would be on our infrastructure, which includes crummy roads. If you've been in Bethel, you see our roads. We suffer from ice roads in the winter and dust and muddy roads in the summertime. The impact would be on breaking sewer lines, and we get reports every day of breaking sewer lines, which right now our money and resources are being stretched. Leaking sewer lagoons, the roller coaster broadwalks, because we don't have ways in which our residents can walk on the streets. They have to use broadwalks to walk, and that's essential for public transportation. eroded seawall, increasing concerns about safety, other essential services. And we say more funding is needed, not less. And because we have no property tax, our sales tax base is not projected to grow in the near future, and our utility customers already bear the cost of construction and maintenance of our limited sanitation system we currently have in place. So we want to get sanitation system citywide. The city has no options. And I thank you for your time, and I hope this has been helpful.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hunter. We have had Mr. Carlton, who is the mayor of the Ketchikan Gateway Borough, waiting very patiently to testify. Mr. Carlton?
Yes, thank you, Representative McLean and Larson, for letting me talk today. I'm the Ketchikan Gateway Borough. My name, mayor, and my name is Jim Carlton. I'm a retired Air Force pilot, and I was in the Strategic Air Command for several years, and we had about 370,000 takeoffs on time. And I have a meeting to go to, so I'm going to cut through some of the rhetoric here that in my speech I faxed it up to you.
Yes, we have a copy of it, Mr. Carlton.
A couple of things that I have heard some other people say that I need to reiterate. We have no permanent fund here in Ketchikan. Last year we took a $1.7 million cut within the borough, and to keep taxes down, we took over the Parks and Recreation from the city, so that added to our expense. And last year's cut in the municipal assistance and state revenue sharing amounted to, it was a 16% cut last year. The timing for these overall cuts that we're trying to do now in the governor's proposal with 50% in 1 year is very extreme. If you could do it over a longer period of time, it would be a lot better. We could plan ahead and make adjustments, but 50% in 1 year is almost impossible to meet. We are in the stage right now of in the process of coming up with our own budget. We fully understand that the federal government is passing the buck down to the state, and then they are also making reductions and passing it on down to us, and it's extremely difficult. We understand that we have to bite the bullet and do these kinds of things, but if you could plan it over a longer period of time, it would certainly help. We are looking at our revenues here in town. We're trying to increase economic development, and of course you're well aware of the battle that we've been having with the Federal Forestry Service and our ability to cut trees down and so forth. The pulp mill here locally has 40% of our impact on total income, and if this 50% cut goes through, it will amount to about seven people, between six and seven people will have to be cut in the borough. That's all I have. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Carlton. I'd like to go to Fairbanks, City of Fairbanks, our former representative, Mark Boyer, who's on the other side.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm Mark Boyer, for the record, City Manager of Fairbanks. A 50% reduction in municipal assistance revenue sharing would mean about a 12.5% cut to my budget, or $1.8 million. Revenue sharing in municipal assistance, unfortunately, represents 25% of my general fund budget. The finances of the City of Fairbanks are fairly straightforward. We have a $15.3 million general fund budget to do three primary things. We deliver fire, police, and public works services. We have a very small building department, a very small engineering department. Both of those are self-sustaining through payments from other sources or permit fees. I thought, now that I'm on this side of the fence, that it was interesting to learn about just how much our people do contribute to our services. Of the $15.3 million general fund budget, $11.9 million of that is comes to us through local taxes. $4.6 million of it is property tax. We have a 7% gross utility tax on our electric, water, wastewater, and telephone system, which equates to about $3.5 million in tax we collect $1.1 million in charges for services, including cemetery, garbage, ambulances, those types of things. Another $1.5 million through an alcohol and a cigarette tax, and $1.2 million from miscellaneous fines, interest, grant administration, and those types of things. So we are heavily dependent on local tax support. In fact, 75% of our budget is locally tax-generated support. But a cut of the magnitude that you're talking about, a 1.7 or 1. Almost a $1.8 million cut, would be quite devastating to the city of Fairbanks. We have already reduced since 1987 our workforce 50%. We had 300 employees in 1987, and currently we have just under 150 employees. Our utility employee workforce has been over the same period of time reduced by 40%. I know what the people of the state are telling all of you, and that is that they won't support local, they won't support a state tax initiative until they've seen cuts in government, and they don't care where the tax, where the cuts manifest, whether or not it's at the state level or the local level. The public generally is fed up with overpaying what they perceive to be state or local government workers, and I'm here to say that in our case in Fairbanks, and what I hear others saying is that we've taken the cuts, we've made the reductions, we've shrunk what it is we do to the bare essentials. And whatever you do in the next few months, whatever cuts you propose to local governments, now those cuts equal taxes. So if those of you around the table are looking for ways to avoid a general taxation scheme, cuts to municipal assistance and revenue sharing did not avoid taxes. Cuts clearly mean an equal taxes today. Otherwise, it means the wholesale elimination of services that we provide. A $1.8 million cut in municipal assistance and revenue sharing would mean that I would have to eliminate fire service in its entirety. It's just that simple. We have too few alternatives, or the only alternative left is to raise taxes. So, again, I know it's difficult. I know how troubling it is for you. But local governments, now from my perspective at this point, have been taking the brunt and making the reductions, holding the line on wages. I'm now the chief negotiator for the city of Fairbanks, and we have 9 bargaining units. I'm in the middle of 5 different bargaining negotiations right now with 5 different units. And unlike the state, we're holding the line on wages. And I heard other city managers and other administrators say the same type of thing. We are holding the line on wages. We are not having increased wages for our people who are delivering vital services. That's not the case at the state level. You're not being nearly as successful at bargaining as we are at the local level. That's something you need to hopefully take a closer look at. And I know it's difficult and almost impossible to get at, but we're doing the hard work. We're doing the difficult task here. I represent 33,000 voters. That's roughly 3 of you sitting around the table. And let me tell you, they are on your back, in your face, on a daily basis. So we're trying to hold things together at the local level. Appreciate the difficulty of your task, and thank you for the opportunity to make these comments.
Thank you very much, Representative Boyer. We have Chairman Larson, who'd like to.
Yes. Hi, Mark. One quick question. You mentioned negotiations. Do your employees work 37 and a half hours or 40 hours a week?
We have a 40-hour work week. And some of our people in the police and fire actually are logging in as much as double that in overtime because we don't have the ability to expand our workforce. So some of our employees are working 70 and 80 hours a week.
But your standard work week is 40 hours.
Correct.
Thank you, Mark, very much.
Thank you.
Representative Martin?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Boyer mentioned 2 things that are of interest to me. One, we represent 600,000 people statewide, and in my city, I don't represent a small area, I represent the whole city, 240,000 people. But on taxes, could you give us a little thumbnail sketch of what the people in your community have said in the last few years about taxes?
Well, it's a schizophrenic approach to taxation in this community. The people in Fairbanks, they have a chosen tax scheme, and their chosen tax scheme is represents $4.6 million of property taxes. And then they have taxed their utility system, which is a very broad-based utility system. We provide water, wastewater, garbage, of our utilities, $1.5 million on the sale of alcohol and cigarettes, and then other charges for services. So we have a very broad-based sales tax. It's just very selective in how the people in this community have elected to portray it. And what the those taxes mean on a percentage basis, the $5 million that are collected from the utility and alcohol and cigarette and charges equates to about a 2.5% general sales tax equivalency. So we are taxing ourselves in this community.
Thank you very much. And for the time being, we'll move to Municipality of Anchorage, and we have Jean Dusek.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the Health Finance Committee. Anchorage, as well as other Alaska communities, are deeply concerned with the proposal to slash state revenue sharing municipal systems by half. These kinds of huge cuts added to the disproportionate reductions in these revenues in the last several years would be devastating to all municipalities and cities around the state. Anchorage is no exception. In 1986, Anchorage received $55.7 million in revenue. To concur with the governor's proposal, next year that number will be down to $13.3 million. In recent years, Anchorage has been able to pay a balanced budget with essential services funding at pretty much at the continuation level. In order to stay within available revenue, we have taken positive actions to hold down the cost of running our city. In addition to certain wage and benefit concessions, most of these savings resulted from positive actions taken by our municipal department. Ours can only get so much blood out of the turnip. Our options will be much more limited for future budget reductions. It seems clear that reductions to services throughout Anchorage government will have to be made. In recent past years, we have been able to minimize the reductions in essential fire, police, EMS, road maintenance, and health programs. However, with the magnitude of the state revenue reductions that are being proposed by the governor, these programs and services can no longer be spared. Yesterday, we faxed to the committee a list of the program and services that would most likely be candidates for reductions if the governor's proposed budget prevails. Do you have that list? I hope you do. These cuts are based on the priorities in our 1994 budget process. However, a new hearing process could result in some changes from the list that has been provided to the committee. Without doubt, however, any reduction in state revenue will mean reductions services and elimination of programs in Anchorage. So we estimate that this will result in about a reduction in 200 municipal employees. This will have an adverse impact not only on the Anchorage economy, but on the entire Alaskan economy, just at a time when our economies are on the rebound. Only state revenues require a reduction in the state government budget. It's only fair for we in local government take our share of the cut. However, the current trend for the state to balance its budget on the backs of local governments by disproportionate reductions in state revenue sharing municipal assistance is inequitable and only serves to increase the pressure on local budgets. That's been inferred by some that the reason state revenue sharing municipal assistance is getting such a disproportionate cut is since these programs are unique to Alaska. As has been pointed out by the municipal league, it just is not so. Since Alaska communities have taken such a disproportionate reduction in state revenue in recent years, we strongly request that the FY95 funding for state revenue sharing and municipal assistance remain at the FY94 level. The budget has to be set somewhere. You've got only so much to get out of that pipe. May I be bold enough to suggest that it might be time for the state to start doing some of the things that we in local government have had to do in the last few years because of falling state revenue, such as whole line of wages, holiday functions and reorganization, eliminate nice do nice to have functions, more efficient operations, hiring freezes, reduce the workforce, go from the grade 7.5 hours to 40-hour weeks, reduce low hour priority services, and better manage your budget so you really don't spend all the amount that budget makes available to fund balance supply next year. Some suggestions on how to balance budget too.
Lieutenant speaking.
Oh, I'm going to have any questions
about any of our specific questions. Oh, okay. I wanted to see what.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dusek. And we'll take one more testimony. For the rest that didn't have the opportunity to testify, please submit your written testimonies to our offices. We will take Andy Durney, who's with the City of Nulato.
Okay, thank you for squeezing me in here. I'm the treasurer for the City of Nulato. And as treasurer, I'm well aware of the need to cut state spending. But the governor's proposed cuts for state revenue sharing and municipal assistance place a very unfair share of the burden on small local governments. And they'd be devastating to the City of Nulato. Although we generate some of our own revenues through user fees, charges for services, and fuel sales, we still rely heavily on state revenue sharing and municipal assistance funds to provide basic services to the people of Nulato. As it is, we've reduced many of those services in recent years. We eliminated recreation programs long ago. We quit hauling trash. We reduced funding for administration, for village government, SR program support, public safety, search and rescue, and operation of the public washateria, and almost all other city programs. We eliminated jobs for a village police officer, city maintenance man, and office aide, and the remaining regular positions are all part-time. Half our employees work three or less hours per day, and wages have been frozen at the same levels for the last 3 years. We don't provide any retirement, health care benefits, or any job security, and we're supposed to be the major employer in the community of Nulato. At the same time, we're faced with increasing costs due to the cuts in power cost equalization, grant net and other state programs, and increasing state and federal mandates and requirements. It's increasingly difficult to keep up with DEC regulations, Coast Guard regulations on bulk fuel storage facilities, audit and insurance requirements, and other reporting requirements while handling the routine daily affairs of the city, all on a part-time basis. In general, the less funding there is, the more paperwork seems to be required. At this point, I just don't have any idea of how we will fill the void created if the governor's proposed cuts in state revenue sharing and municipal assistance are adopted. One proposal has already been made to operate a city-owned liquor store, but this is in a community where over 30 people have died of alcohol-related deaths in the last 20 years, and where alcohol abuse causes major personal and community problems. So, that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We just have one more testimony from William Miller.
Good morning. I'm William Miller, president of the Native Village of Dot Lake. I'm also the village administrator, grant writer, utility manager, maintenance man. All of these are unpaid positions. My paid position is I'm executive director of United Crow Band, Inc., a small social service agency in Tok. Travel 100 miles a day back and forth to go to work. I'd like to address the issue of revenue sharing for unincorporated communities. When the program was initiated, it was intended to assist with the operation and maintenance cost for facilities and to help provide local services for the residents. The first funding under the program was for $25,000, and we were informed at that time to establish and plan services, facilities, and O&M for our communities. We established our budget on the assumption that the funds would remain approximately at the $25,000 level. Since the start of the program, we've gone from 25,000 to 9,794, and with the proposed cuts, we'd be down to roughly $5,000 next year, which is an overall 80% cut. The closest incorporated community to us would have been Bettles. They received their first funding at 43,000 in 87. And they'd be reduced to 31,000 roughly, or a 26% cut this year. I feel that the reductions will result in a failure to provide funds for O&M in our communities, and will in the future require crisis intervention at a far greater cost than what you'd be paying now. As unincorporated communities, we have no land base, nor is there any economic base available to us. If we were to incorporate into a city, the state would transfer only the 14C3 lands to us, which would only add to our cost and problems. We're surrounded by Anxka lands that are unimproved. Therefore, we would not have a tax base on those lands even if we incorporated. As an unincorporated community, we do not have the Alaska Municipal League to represent us, and we depend on the legislature to look out for our interest. We do not have the powers of the city or borough. We have the responsibility to comply with the same water treatment, same water sanitation requirements as the cities do, only we have to do it with no basic funding. Thank you.
Are there any questions? Thank you very much. This will conclude our hearings this morning. I really do appreciate the participations from all the communities. And if you have testimonies to send, please send them to the House Finance. Thank you.
And at this time, we'll call the House Committee to order. And the order of our bills today, while we're waiting for a quorum, I'll go over them. First bill will be House Bill 409. That's the AFDC on demo project and decreases. Second bill will be House Bill 347, State Long-Term Planning. Third bill will be House Bill 299, the driver's license revocation on alcohol and drugs. House Bill 139 was scheduled to be heard today. However, I've been informed that the companion bill, Senate Bill 70, has now passed the Senate and it's in the House Hess Committee. So that will be the vehicle that we will use, and when we get that bill, we will then hear the Assistant Technology Loan Guarantee before the House Finance Committee. So House Bill 139 will not be heard today. We now have Representative Hoffman, Grusendorf, Hanley, myself, Larson. Well, we're waiting for a quorum, too, in regards to budget work. I'd like to basically bring up the following. And on everyone's desk, we have the schedule for agency closeout. And as stated, starting on Friday, March the 25th, the House Finance Committee will begin closing out agency budgets. Attached is a sheet showing the order in which agency closeouts will occur. However, this list is subject to change depending on the day-to-day circumstances encountered by the committee during the closeout process. In both the subcommittee reports, any amendments by the Finance Committee members will be taken up at the time an agency is closed out. And unless otherwise announced, meetings will begin at 8:30 a.m. each day. So basically, the process we would like to follow following our public teleconferences on Wednesday and Thursday, we will start then at 8:30 in the morning on Friday, and probably to get a draft committee substitute so we know what we will be making amendments to. We'll have a motion that we adopt the subcommittee closeout reports as the vehicle to be used by the full finance committee in their deliberations. And we'd ask then that all amendments that are offered be made to the subcommittee recommendation. And then, just to get things started, on page 2, I drew up a list of agencies at the order in which we would hope to be able to take it, starting with administration. In other words, I tried to group about 5 or 6 of them together, what I call group 1, so that instead of trying to look at all of the amendments and try to do them all at one time, because as we have done in the past several years, we have asked to have amendments in so that everyone has an opportunity to review them before they come up before the committee. We've established kind of 3 groups here. I know it's ambitious, and I don't know whether we can get through group 1, say, on Friday. But whatever we don't get done, we would carry over into the next day. And we're asking then if everyone would kind of review administration, military and veterans affairs, labor, community and regional affairs, education and revenue. And if you have any amendments you'd like to offer, to please try to have those prepared by 5 o'clock on Thursday so that they can be distributed to all members of the Finance Committee before we actually take up the agency. And we'll try to do the same thing for group 2 and group 3. So if anyone has any questions or concerns or recommendations on a better way to do it, I'm all ears. Representative Navarre?
I just have one question, Mr. Chairman, and that is that during discussion and debate on the budgets, there may be amendments that come up at that time that haven't been turned in advance that we might want to offer. So
That is correct. This is not to tell anyone that they cannot make amendments. This is just to say that where possible, let's get them as soon as possible, and so that everyone has a chance to review them, and we'll set up some orderly process then in which to do it. Representative Brown?
Thank you. Are all the subcommittee reports available now?
I think all the subcommittee reports are available, except, of course, the governor's budget and the legislative budget. And we'll try to get those complete by next Monday.
So the information that I think the schedule shows being distributed today to tell us what the subcommittee reports are, is that available today?
It's my understanding that each office has been provided with two copies, and copies have also been distributed to Judy. Could you tell us, I know around the LIOs and so forth?
They all have copies, LIOs, and everybody should have copies in office.
But copies are available for anyone who wants them. Did we miss anyone, Carol?
Well, everybody's office received two complete sets of the alleged subcommittee recommendations this morning in their
exercise. So anything else on this subject before we go to House Bill 409? You know what I always think of House Bill 409? This goes back years ago. But there was a topic up I didn't know anything about, and then Representative Adams made me chairman of the subcommittee for House Bill 409, and I learned more about the Hess budget and different things at that time than I've really cared to know. So this keeps bringing up bad memories, Representative Hanley.
You gave me the Hess budget, Mr. Chairman. I didn't ask for
it. Anyhow, House Bill 409. I shouldn't have said that. But it was a process that we spent about 2.5 months on, but finally we got a bill that passed, and I think it was pretty well supported in both houses, so it ended up good. But House Bill 409 is an act relating to the maximum amount of assistance that may be granted under the Adult Public Assistance Program and the Program of Aid to Families with Dependent Children, proposing a special demonstration project within the Program of Aid to Families with Dependent Children, and directing the Department of Health and Social Services to seek waivers from the federal government to implement the project and providing for an effective date. And it's sponsored by Representative. And what we have before us then was committee substitute for House Bill 409 Hess. We have started on the amendment process, and we had gotten to amendment number 5. And that's where we left off the last time we were on this bill. And for members of the committee and for the audience, the order in which we set the bills to discuss today would be House Bill 409 first, and House Bill 347 second. Third is House Bill 299. And fourth, House Bill 139 has been taken off the agenda because its companion bill on the Senate side has now passed the Senate and is in the House Hess Committee. And I see we have are these copies of amendments that were handed out before, or are these new amendments?
These are new amendments.
New amendments. Okay, let's number them.
Starts on the fourth floor with at least one more amendment. Using two machines. Unbelievable.
Okay, number 8, we'll take dot 22 by Representative McLean and make that number 8. And then we have dot 19 by Representative Brown. We'll make that amendment number 9. And do we have any other amendments at this time?
And then there's dot 24 and dot 25 that are attached to number 9. Or
those are extra.
Oh, separate? Yes.
I see. Okay. And then dot 24 will be amendment number 10. And dot 25 will be amendment number 11. Look and see if that's the one on the inner tie.
Yeah.
No? Okay, number 5, Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, these next three were prepared by Representative Bryce, and I understand he's on the way, and I would just ask.
Oh. Sorry, Representative Bryce, would you like to join us here?
Chairman.
Representative Grusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Brown, would you give the last number on that? In other words, I have them all numbered, but I have a bunch of them here.
Dot 25 was 11, and dot 24 was 10, and dot 19 was 9, and dot 22 was 8. Representative Bryce, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for listening to the amendment number 5. Basically, what it does is it deletes the references to adult public assistance. We've heard earlier testimony that...
This was dot 7.
Dot 7, okay.
That's so many of them.
I tell you what, I got hundreds of them. Dot 7 deletes workfare and applies the waivers across the state. My largest concern, as I'd stated, maybe a little abruptly, but with all due respect to the sponsor, that that in the past committees, we were not presented with very strong evidence that the proposed form of workfare that we're discussing in HB 409 was very effective in getting people off welfare, and that there was a concern that, or there have been concerns brought up by the council to study law and social policy, that over a lot of, or many states that have tried this, a lot of the administrators have come to the conclusion that it's generally better to dedicate the funds to, say, a jobs program like we've got, you know, something that requires OJT, literacy training, various other aspects of job readiness, to rather than to putting a lot of money into the development of a quote-unquote works fair program. And they have found that the success through jobs was higher than through these various other states' workfare. I'm not sure which state's program that 409's workfare is based upon, but I believe, I have not seen any evidence stating that it does get people off long-term welfare. And so what we would do is cut out workfare, apply the waivers across the state.
Okay, does anyone have any questions of Representative Brutz? Representative Brown.
And then what would the fiscal impact be of adopting this amendment?
The fiscal impact, I think, you could probably see a dramatic decrease in the necessary state employees to implement the workfare program. I believe there's the need for 3 to 4 positions to apply for the federal waivers and to administer that program. But I believe that in reflecting or looking through your fiscal notes, you would probably be able to see a decrease of 21 to 22, probably with Representative Terrio's amendments, 30, maybe 32 administrative positions down to 4 to 5, I would assume.
Any further questions?
Comments, but if they get questions,
okay, we're still on questions. Any further questions? Okay, response, Representative Hennig.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would be opposed to the amendment, and basically, as he said, it takes out the workfare portion, which I think is a very valuable part of the demonstration project. There are a number of things that have been suggested. I have not seen the evidence that shows that jobs, I mean, I don't have the specific language that shows that jobs is exceedingly good at getting people off the program or that it works. I would note that in our state, there is their annual report that suggests that over the over $3.2 million in welfare has been saved since 91 as a result of jobs, parents, employment, and that their total earnings have been about $5 million. At least from the numbers that we haven't confirmed everything, but all the total amount of money spent on jobs during that time frame is, looks like it's about $42 million, with all the benefits, the work programs, the child care, daycare assistance, the administration of it. So that if you want to look at success rates, I don't know if that's necessarily, people have pointed to that in the past. So we spent $42 million total funds and saved a total of $3.2 million for our jobs program. I don't know that is a real good success rate. This is a different program. It does not provide the training. It provides a requirement to work, number one.
which is slightly is different. There is some job resume training available, as well as the community service work that's out there for the people. They have to do a certain amount. And I would suggest that it's worthwhile. In fact, some of the studies in other states are suggesting that it's not so much the education or the training, it's whether they can get a job or not. And the fact that people are required to get jobs and job training is more influential in actually getting people off than the education that they receive. I would suggest that this is a valuable tool to provide that requirement for people to work and to get a comparison between the money we spend on a workfare type program, where basically what we do is provide community service jobs as well as a little bit of training, and see how that affects the people on the program versus the extensive training that goes on under a program that we have right now, which is the jobs program. And that's part of the reason for some of these demonstration projects. The jobs program is increasing each year. The number of people that are being served by it are increasing because the federal government requires that to happen. I guess you'd say you can't have it both ways. Most of the studies say between 85 and 90% of the people on these programs say they want to work. And then if you look at the study, one of the studies that's been used to say that the workfare is not proven to be effective in getting people off work does say that about, I think it was 88% of the people that participated in workfare thought the work requirement was fair. And they also say in the same study that the value of the work performed generally made these programs a worthwhile investment for the taxpayers. So the criticisms that are here of some of the workfare, that it hasn't, even from the report that most people point to saying that it has not worked, they are not real strong to say that. In fact, they say that most of the work requirements are so low and for only a limited amount of time, 13 weeks, that it's real hard to judge. And in fact, I did point out the other day that in Ohio, where they had a substantial workfare requirement of up to 30 hours a week, that they had significant results of people that actually did come off the AFDC rolls. So just on results based, and then I think, I'd be opposed to this particular amendment. This is a big part of the bill, as far as I'm concerned, is providing the workfare.
I see the commissioner's here. If she'd like to make any response. Thank you for being with us today. Do we have any other questions? Representative Brown.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't know because I haven't read all these studies, but the testimony we've heard indicates from people who are studying this and who work with this all the time that workfare is not effective in leading people to long-term viable employment. And so I guess the question you have to ask yourself is it worth it to establish the bureaucracy required to oversee this and to pay the other ancillary costs like childcare in order to have people go to public service jobs? Are these make-work jobs? And it just seems that the testimony from people who are associated with it is that it doesn't, you know, that this particular thing is not very effective and that there are better approaches.
Okay. Could we have you move the amendment, and then we'll take.
Okay, I'll move amendment number 5.
Okay. Discussion on the motion. Does the committee wish any more discussion? Are you ready for the question, Representative Novak?
Yeah, just for a second. The project area amendment. I guess this is actually 2 amendments. One takes out the workfare and one
spreads it across the waivers.
The project statewide.
The rest of the project
is left,
which is the waivers part.
Right. So I think I support that part. So could we consider them separately?
You would wish to divide the question?
Divided.
Yeah, are there any objections to the question being divided? Hearing none, then, Representative Navarre. Question has been divided.
Okay.
What part would you like to discuss first?
Doesn't matter to me.
What part should you divide?
Well, I heard all the workfare discussion just a second ago. I want to hear Representative Hanley's opposing side, if he's going to oppose the scope and structure part of the amendment.
OK. Okay, in regards to applying the waiver statewide?
Statewide.
Representative Henley?
To that, Mr. Chairman, we talked a little bit about it. I guess my intent for the whole bill was to do a demonstration. We could do it in every community, I guess, but if we're going to do the whole thing, the costs are going to go up incredibly to do it in the whole state. We originally picked with the department, asked them which areas, and picked Anchorage, Mat-Su, because of their high, very high AFDC client load in there. We picked the largest community where there's the most opportunity for jobs and other things, and then a rural. We're trying to decide one rural community so that they generally don't have enough people in some of the smaller communities to do a test group and a control group. So we picked a rural community. The department has checked with the federal government as to whether they could put all the people. I don't know that the federal government would be interested in using every rural community that doesn't have enough for a test group. And then we start adding all the small communities. It gets to be problematic as far as setting up the administration in all the different areas. So
I don't care if you divide them.
Okay, well, let's not.
That's not.
What was that again, Mike? I'm sorry.
I don't care if you divide them.
Okay, did you want to withdraw your motion then?
I'll withdraw my motion.
Okay. Are there any objections to it being withdrawn? Hearing none then, the motion has been withdrawn and amendment number 5 is back before us. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Mr. Martin?
No.
Mr. Barr? Yes. Mr.
No.
Mr.
No.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
No.
No.
Henry.
No.
President Hoffman.
Yes.
President McCain.
No.
President Larson.
No.
President Navarre.
No.
Two
yeas. Please note that amendment number 5 has failed adoption. And we go to amendment number 6. Representative Brown.
I'd move amendment number 6 and ask Representative Bryce to explain it.
Representative Bryce.
Just to make sure my papers didn't get messed around. This is dot 11?
Right.
Okay. What this would do, there was some discussion in the HES committee that what might happen is the state applies for the waivers, the federal government, or we get going in the demonstration projects with the waivers and the workfare, and then the federal government comes in and implements all this welfare reform that we're expecting that they will. What we did in HES was we amended 409 to allow, in that case, the state to opt out of certain areas of the demonstration project that we had started if the federal government implements those changes at that level. The reason being, if we set out a demonstration project in 409, the state generally does not have the ability to go back and make changes to that demonstration project. The state would have to come back through statute to make changes in the demonstration project to allow the rest of the state to participate within the various waivers, the 100-hour rule waiver, the automobile allowance waiver, that type of stuff. What amendment number 6, I believe it is, or 7 does, states that ratable reductions will be replaced if we can't, if the federal government comes in and allows the state to apply the demonstration projects across the state.
Any questions of Representative Bryce? Response, Representative Henley?
I think I understand. I mean, if that's the case, if they repeal them, then I don't have a problem with the, if we get rid of the folks that are doing it, we have no more demonstration project. But the way this is worded, if you look at the first section, basically it says they're basically repeal the ratable on January 1st if they don't have one in place, a demonstration project. And I don't know that I have a particular problem with that. I think if they should or shouldn't have something going,
and it says at least part of the waivers or the workfare in place. That doesn't concern me as much. I could ask the department about it if they don't have something going by January of 96. The second, number two, concerns me a little bit because it says on the date, basically what this does is a repealer mm-hmm. of those ratable reductions on the date that the department discontinues under Section 4B1 all or part of the demonstration project described in Sections 5 and 6. So my concern there is that if they, for whatever reason, did 90% of it and were running 90% of it but did not, for whatever reason, either get a waiver on the 100-hour rule or something like that, that this would tell them that the ratable, because they aren't implementing the full, they've discontinued a part of the demonstration project, that may mean that the ratable reduction goes into effect even though the program, 90% of the program is still continuing. And I'm not sure that the language does that. We've given them the flexibility that if the feds come back and say, we're going to do this across the board for everybody, they can discontinue the project totally. I don't think that's necessarily clear in this particular amendment. I wouldn't want them to repeal the ratable because mm-hmm. necessarily if only one part of the waiver isn't granted.
Representative Bryce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then it might be possible to clarify the language to include proportionately reinstitute the ratables, the proportion that of the demonstration project being discontinued. Some language along that.
Yeah, let me see if the department or Ms. Hansen has a comment while we're thinking that over. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jan Hansen, Director of Public Assistance. As I'm following the discussion here, I think that it might be very difficult to put the department in a difficult position in terms of if we had language concerning proportional to determine at some point the proportional costs of the project versus a ratable, and to I think that would cause us problems. As I'm listening to the debate, if there's a problem, it would seem to me we either have a ratable and we're doing a project, or we don't have a ratable and we're not doing a project. And if the project ends for some reason, that the ratable went away. But I think, though again, this is just a very quick response, trying to do some kind of a proportional and decide what proportion of the project was still there in relation to a ratable would be a very difficult administrative task.
Representative Bryce?
The question think that I'm trying to get at with the amendment is to ensure that, and there's a possibility within a year, although unlikely, but at some point in time the federal government just might do everything that's in HB 409, that at which point in time we're able to go ahead and spread the demonstration projects across the state. But we still have these ratables in place, and I would like to possibly see some language to where those ratables would be taken away, or you know, what happens at, or you know, they disappear after the fifth year in 409 at the end of the demonstration project. I would just assume that if the demonstration project were not fully implemented or were to not be or were to end before the 5 years, that those ratables would come back, or that those reductions would be taken away at that point in time.
Your Representative Hanley, and then Martin.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think it's going to be very difficult to have an automatic repealer based on not knowing what does or doesn't, or what percent of it actually is implemented. If you wanted to say if they, and that discontinues all of the demonstration project described in those sections, so it's clear if the feds come in and do this for everybody and they discontinue the demonstration project totally, then that might make some sense. But to try and say that if 92% of it or 63%, it depends on what 63%. Anyway, I have a concern with it the way
Okay, response, Representative Bryce, then Martin.
I think the fiscal notes are fairly accurate in that they break out certain parts of the program and assign certain budget figures for those types of programs. Maybe Ms. Hansen could discuss that or discuss the possibility of working it along those lines.
Okay. Let's get Representative Martin's question first.
Looking at this more or less, that it's a disincentive to do anything. By the time the law is set in and then you go through your normal procedure to start up regulations and procedures and have input on the if or buts and the financial aspects of it, and then you get started, and here you are, you want them to end it by January the 1st. I just think creative thinking like that should be taking place maybe 3 or 4 years after the project has been experienced a little bit, and then when you have the give and takes of a human life and the experience of something. This is creative thinking, but it's way ahead of the game.
A response?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Generally, it takes a year, year and a half to get these applications in.
Yeah. Well, you had it ended January the 1st, 96.
Which is a year, year and a half from now, which is generally what it takes if they're not implemented at that point in time. Yeah. And I would also suggest that, that's okay.
Okay, amendment number 6 has been moved. We have had discussion. Does the committee wish any additional discussion? Representative Brown?
I would move to amend in the page 5, line 30, portion number 2, that we delete or part of in line 2 of number 2, and also the same delete or part of in the second number 2 on page 2 of the amendment.
And the effects of that would be?
I'm attempting to address the concern that Representative Hanley stated, and by deleting or part of, the ratables would be repealed on the date at which the department discontinued operation of all of the projects described in sections 5 and 6. So it would be accounting for that possibility of the federal government acting to nullify our demonstration, because now we'd be having a statewide program, and just saying if that were to happen, we don't want these ratables, the rationale for which the reason we're cutting benefits to poor women and children is so we can fund these demonstration programs. Well, if the demonstration's not happening anymore, we're saying we'd like to have the ratables be repealed at that point instead of continuing on to the effective date that's now stated in the bill.
Okay, we have a motion to amend amendment number 6. Is Luann able to get the motion?
Representative Navarre points out I should not be deleting the of. It should just be or part, so it'd be of all of the demonstration project. So we're just deleting those two words instead of three. So we'd be deleting or part, not or part of.
Okay, were you able to? Okay. We're still keeping up then. Discussion on the motion to amend.
Jet.
Are there objections to the motion to amend?
I don't care. This is to amend the amendment, correct?
Yes. Are there objections to the motion to amend? Hearing none, then, the amendment to the motion has been adopted. Further discussion on amendment number 6 as amended. Mr. Representative Chairman. Henley.
And I'd like to ask Jan, what is your time frame for getting a part of Section 5 and 6 of this implemented?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hanley, are you asking what is our time frame for getting the demonstration to start? January 1st of 96 would be the, we had worked with Representative Hanley in his proposal, that would allow 18 months from the time this bill would be become law, and that's what we anticipate would be. However, I can't guarantee at this point. There are several things. One is the amount of work that has to go into it once we're there. Other unforeseeable factors that occur in the state, as well as unforeseeable factors at the federal. Right now, we've built in, based on what the federal government told us their timeline would be, if a year from now they've changed priorities, we don't have any control. But we think within 18 months that we would have a January 1st startup based on the best information that we have now, but no guarantees.
Mr. Chair, my only concern on that is it's right on their timeline, but if they've gone out, hired the people, done these things, started setting, well, I guess if they're hiring people, that's starting to implement the program. Is that correct? Is that the intent of Mr. Bryce? If they,
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hanley, I guess perhaps the discussion here is there's two, and I'm not clear what would we mean by operating a demonstration project for ourselves. I would begin the operation of a project as soon as funding was available, because as soon as I assign a staff person to start working on the waiver, I'm operating the demonstration. From a federal level, we would begin operating a demonstration the month that the first clients were into it. So I'm not clear here which reference this would be.
Well, the way I took it to be, it's, this would kick in when the department made the decision to discontinue. Wasn't that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Which is the second part, or whether the department had been able to, you know, I think my view of operating is somewhere probably in between the two, is that I would see it as where the waivers had been applied for, and at least, well, chances are you might get one, you might get all of them. If you get one and you're able to start applying that one immediately at that point in time, that that they are considered operating and implementing sections or parts of sections 5 and 6.
Representative Henley?
I understand what's trying to go on. My concern is that we don't have a definition of in here of what is operating. Mm-hmm. I think if clearly by next year at this time we should know whether what success they've had. If they aren't able to get it, we can repeal it at that time, even before January 1st of 96. We won't know, or whether they're going to have part of it approved or not part of it approved, or what the implementation level is. We'll know better once the progress starts. So I think I'd just rather not do mm-hmm. this at all.
Okay, what we have before us is amendment number 6 as amended. Do we, are there objections to the motion maintained? Hearing? Would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Navarre?
Yes.
Representative Cornell?
No.
Representative Terrio?
No.
Representative Brown?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Grisendorf?
Yes.
Representative Hanley?
No.
Representative Hoffman?
Yes.
Representative Martin?
No.
Representative Larson?
No.
Representative McLean?
No.
4 yeas, 7 nays.
Will you please note? We now have before us amendment number 7, which is dot 6. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move number 7 and ask Representative Bryce to explain it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Briefly, what dot 6 does is it addresses a couple of questions that have been brought up. And it also brings into the realm of discussion the importance of child support and the Child Support Enforcement Division and the impacts that that division has on programs like AFDC. What we would do is we would incorporate two ideas. One, which would be that if a quote-unquote or a person in arrears for child support payments going to the state, needing to apply for a professional license, they would have to come or bring or address that arrearage, you know, by paying up their child support before they could receive those license. Also, what it would do is implement a program that would criminalize the actions of an employer who might be hiding or who would be helping a person who hasn't paid their child support by hiding certain aspects of their employment.
Mr. Chairman?
It took an 11-page amendment to a 5-page bill to do that?
Well, actually, Representative Martin could probably discuss quite a bit some of the employees' stuff.
Make it short, Mr. Chairman. It's pulling bill out of committee. Even if it's my bill, I don't support it. Not pulling it out of committee. If the heads committee wants to sit on it, then I have to suffer. It's a good bill, good ideas, but it's not applicable for this particular committee or in this way.
Which brings up the case that I want, this is child support in general, whether it's Representative Martin's bill, whether it's anybody else's bill, or whether it's a completely new concept for CSED, is a very important aspect of welfare, quote-unquote welfare reform. And I believe that it's one area that should be discussed within the realms of 409, and I think it would be very appropriate, especially when we're discussing the need of looking towards other alternatives for certain people on AFDC. That would be is to have certain people pay their debts and pay for the responsibilities. So,
Representative Martin, could you give us an update on the progress of your bill?
Well, surprisingly, the people who I thought were most concerned about minority children and children of